to get the inside track, to talk about the things that we think is on the style radar at the moment. And we think there's something going on with TaylorMade, with Bespoke. And we are very, very grateful that our media host today is Studio Magazine. When the issue comes into our office, we all pounce on it because there's so much information to read. If you haven't read it, it's the business magazine for interior designers and architects, packed with information.
Thanks, Becky.
Good articles. And we've got the most amazing panel. Amazing panel. I'm going to leave Elspeth Critton, the editor of Studio, to introduce them. But in the meanwhile, let's give them a very warm welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Becky, and I'm delighted to welcome our panel for today. We have Ariane Steinbeck from RPW Design, Alan McVitty from M Studio, and Gemma Ullman from Decca. And I'm going to start with you, Gemma. Can you just, we're talking about bespoke, but can you outline to us what you mean by bespoke and some of the products that you sell here at Decca?
So for us, there's three terms that we actually use. We use standard, meaning something that we've designed previously and we will repeat make as furniture manufacturers. Then we have something we call custom, which is where we've done the design work originally and then somebody says, can I have it bigger? Can I have it in a different colour? And they basically use one of our designs as inspiration for something. And then you have bespoke. And so we tend to use them as three separate things, but people use those phrases in different ways, so don't worry about it. And bespoke is perhaps what you might call fully bespoke, where a designer will come to us with a concept image or a sketch, and then we will work with them and make a piece of furniture from it.
Fantastic. I want to come back later to the actual logistics of how you work together. But for now, Alan, if I can ask you, I know you work across quite big projects, cruises and hotels. What does bespoke, rather than using standard pieces, why would you turn to bespoke for those projects?
I think because we work on larger commercial projects, a lot of the time you want to create a very high residential look and feel. We've got to make sure that it's going to be durable or fit for purpose. Within, you know, when you're designing for a boat or for a ship, there's various things you need to take into account. There's weight, there's the movement of the ship. So those are the things that need to be considered. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the products and supplies we deal with on our commercial side of the business is all bespoke. And it doesn't just stop with furniture. It's lighting, it's carpets. Everything.
So you do the whole turnkey, you'll do the whole project.
Yeah. And then that filters across to when we're doing residential projects. A lot of the time, you know, if you've got the right clients and they very much trust in what you're doing, they trust us as a business to fully tailor to their requirements. And that can be from a dressing room, to a very specialist piece of joinery, whether it be a dressing table or something as simple, simple as a coffee table. As we all know, that can involve very different materials. Yeah. And
I was talking to somebody the other day, and they had been asked to do a dressing room, and they'd been asked to line it and make it look like the leather of this client's favourite handbag. Have you had those sort of requests?
Yeah.
Very specific.
I've had to sit through, I think, is it called Cribs? Where somebody wanted their dressing room as Mariah Carey's.
Oh.
That is... Yeah. So it doesn't happen that often, but... Yeah, I prostituted my design sense by creating Mariah Carey's dressing room for my client. Of course, we made it much nicer.
Yeah.
And if you're working with the right artisans, you know, it is all about the finish.
Yeah.
And I think ultimately it was more the fact that, you know, on Cribs, when you've got Mariah Carey and it was her shoe collection, you know, when you see a wall of, you know, Louboutin or whatever, and it's all beautifully lit, you know, clients get excited by that.
Yes.
So it's those elements that you need to incorporate.
No, absolutely. And the same for you, Ariane. Can you give us an example of some of the projects you work on and then some of the products that you have had tailor-made for them?
Oh, this is one of them. Oh,
perfect.
This is the Intercontinental Park Lane here in London. This is a suite that was created out of a former office space. So really the highest and best use was not for that real estate, was not to have it be an office, but rather a rental because it overlooks Hyde Park. And so, you know, the whole suite was inspired by the park, and pretty much everything that you see is bespoke. The carpet is bespoke. The desk here that Deca made is bespoke. So are the shelves. Everything was pretty much bespoke because we had to work within limitations of ceiling heights and ventilation requirements and what the hotel management thought the clientele, the prospective clientele would demand. This is a bespoke coffee table. These are off-the-shelf sofas by a well-known Italian manufacturer. This is bespoke. Everything in here is bespoke except for the chandelier. We often use bespoke because each project is very much tailored to a particular market or to a particular brand. And although we do use a good mixture of readily available items, sometimes to make it that much more special when you get into the quantities that we are regularly dealing with, it's just as effective to do it from scratch and to do it exactly the way that we would want it and the client would want it. So this is Marriott County Hall, which is a lot of Deca bespoke. You know, this item was made bespoke. I think in hotels it's hard to not have bespoke. We don't do any residential work, so I don't know that area of interior design at all. But I would imagine, in my past life, I've done a few residential jobs, and even there, it's mostly bespoke because the clients want something specific for that space, and it's hard to find that already on the market,
yeah,
or
sure.
At least finding something that you wouldn't want to change a little bit.
Yeah.
So, we enjoy doing bespoke.
For these big projects, for the hotels, and we were just talking now about cruise liners, it's a very quick turnaround, isn't it? So getting bespoke products made for you, how quickly can pieces be made and turned around?
Well, for a proper hotel project, you have about a year's time worth of designing.
Right, yeah.
So you have to sort of plan that in,
you
of how long
the
lead times
yeah.
are. It's usually the case goods and the carpets that are the longest lead time. So anywhere between 12 to 18 weeks. You know, sometimes things can come faster, but those are the regular production times that one needs to plan for, because if the order is not placed, if the client has not paid, production timelines don't start. So you have to get those items approved and into production sooner than you would other things that might come off the shelf.
Yeah,
and that's
for sure.
Definitely one of the restrictions of bespoke. Lots of people want to make bespoke furniture, but there's no shortcuts. You have to have enough time for the design process. And as a manufacturer, you know, we can make one item or we can make 100 of items, but it still takes time, and yours is not the only item going through a factory. So therefore, it's completely flexible in what you make, but it's pretty inflexible in how long it takes to make it,
yeah.
because you just can't cut back the design time or the manufacturing time.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
And how does that process start? Do you initially, the client come to you, or because your clients trust you, you come up with a design and then you come to someone who produces the furniture? How does it, is it just a sketch on a packet?
Well, you can see this is one of our projects. So it's hotel projects, drinks cabinet. So initial kind of mood, sketches, inspiration. And the thing is, then you have to think about the practicality. What is the function of this piece? So here, because it's a hotel, it needed to have an espresso machine. It needed all the crockery inside. Then you needed the glasses. It needed to include a fridge, which we were able to resource. And that's the green finish. So this is actually a fridge drawer.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's a combination of, there's a technical aspect to what, to the bespoke, and then there's the aesthetic. So you want, again, it comes back to what I said in terms of creating something which looks beautiful, but actually works.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time is listening to your clients, whether it is residential, commercial, marine, whatever, and really trying to understand how it's going to be used. And try and, you know, work
so
through.
So the longer you spend having that conversation at the beginning, the more likely you're going to get the good results at the end. And then do you then have that conversation with someone like
Gemma? Yeah, it's so important to have good relationships with your suppliers. And the longer the relationship, the easier it becomes, because a lot of the time they understand how you know, how you want it to look, or what the finish you're actually looking for.
And also,
that's really important.
There's a lot, you know, I'm thinking about that minibar and how many minibars we've done over the years. There's so much to remember.
Yes.
And the hotel hasn't decided what packets of what they want in this drawer. They just want them.
Yes. No. Yeah.
And they want it to look neat and tidy at all times. But we can't tell you what that's going to be.
Yeah.
So that's when, you know,
you've got to kind of future-proof it as well.
Yeah, exactly. You draw on everybody's experience to try and solve that problem. Mm-hmm. You know, they haven't actually chosen the wine glasses yet, but they want wine glasses in the door, so you don't want them falling out and smashing, and, you know, so you work together.
So there's a lot of logistics. It's not just about being obviously creative, but there's a lot of logistics.
Or being able to open the door of the minibar once the...
once everything's inside.
Minibars are a total nightmare. They always change. They're loud. You know, but you still have to ventilate them properly, so they heat up this cabinet. So there's a lot of technical stuff that it really helps to have a... well-worn I like that, actually. I like to be told that what I'm envisioning is not practical, rather than having me go through with it and not, you know, really resolve it.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain things that we've, of course, you pick up from every project that you do, but there's other things, you know, there's constantly, there are new materials, there's new hardware, new hinges, new, you know, freight stipulations, all kinds of restrictions. And you may have designed one mini bar, and that fits into most room types, but there might be very much smaller rooms that have to have the same functionality in a much smaller scale. So even if you had started with something that is not fully bespoke, now it gets into the bespoke territory. And so in my experience, it's been very, very enjoyable working with DECA, because they're very open to what can and cannot be accomplished. I find seating to be very, very hard, because not only do you need the time for the lead time and the drawings and da-da-da-da-da, but you are well advised to go to the factory and sit into what we call a white goods, where, you know, the chair might not have the finish that you want, or might not even be made out of the material that you want, but you're testing the ergonomic viability of
the
something.
And so you should take your client when you do that.
Correct.
So you know,
sometimes
you're talking about the
owner of the hotel may be an extremely tall man, and he thinks every chair should suit him, and sometimes... His wife comes along and she's very short.
Sounds like experience.
On certain projects, we've done the bum test.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, depending on the project, that you get a whole variety of shapes and sizes to all sit and take pictures and then send it off to the hierarchy of any organisation for them to approve.
Fascinating.
Yeah, and it's also different, you know, different areas of the world have different...
Absolutely.
Requirements.
Yeah. So it's no good looking back over past projects and thinking, well, that worked then we can
do
something else here.
You know, you really have to do your research before you start.
And can I come back, Alan, to residential? Because I think you do more residential than Ariane. If you have commissioned bespoke pieces, do they carry more of an emotional heritage? Do customers appreciate that?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. I'm working with one client that, you know, since I set up my own practice 17 years ago, and it's a joy to be working with them again. We've just completed a guest house. It sounds grand, but it is lovely. And just the emotions in that and the joy that it's brought to the family as a whole, because now they feel they've got a holiday house at the end of the drive.
Yeah.
And we're just about embarking on the redevelopment of their main house.
Yeah.
So there is talk afoot in terms of, you know, the mega dressing room.
Yeah.
with for the Labutin and the Jimmy Choo's. Because essentially we're fulfilling people's wishes.
Yes.
And I think the art of bespoke is translating a wish and making it happen and working with, you know, suppliers that can make that a reality.
Yeah.
And you're the kind of, yeah, you're the point of contact.
Yes, yeah.
The conduit to make that all happen.
And does it give you some opportunities to use artisanal techniques or different materials? Do you sometimes see things and then it gives you the opportunity to create pieces that you just
100%.
Haven't seen anywhere else?
You know, this, so talking about the, you know, the guest house, it was a Victorian Gothic gatehouse to what was a big stately home. And then over the years, the stately home is no longer there. But the house and the useful gates are still there.
Yeah.
And when we started the project, it was just going to be a refurbishment. And actually what it turned into was a restoration. And then you're working with artisans that I've never worked with, you know, stonemasons, people to take out all the old leaded windows. And I find that inspiring. I just love it. You know, I've been doing this a long time, interior design, and I would say if you went on our website, you'd see that most of our work is contemporary. And I do love, you know, that's my aesthetic, that's what I love. I like clean lines. But going in and doing something like that, which is, I wouldn't say it was necessarily in my comfort zone, but something I've really enjoyed. And it's the knowledge you get from other people. And I think when we go, you talk about artisans, it's, you know, whether it be a joiner, you know, so, you know, talking to some of the specialist companies when you're using materials like vellum or shagreen or all these incredible marquetries, it is inspiring because ultimately you just think, it opens your mind and just think, well, ultimately you can create anything.
Yeah.
But it's got to be well executed.
Yes, no, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, of course you can create anything at all, but
that's the nice thing about working with deco. You know that it will be well executed, whereas sometimes when you draw something and you send it off to the tender gods, you never know what comes back.
It's got four legs.
It looks like the drawing.
Gemma, have you ever said no if somebody's come and... even they've got great drawings and what have you, and they say this is great. Have you ever said no? Either that's not going to work, or
but there are
I
things
think
that we
mistake.
Can't do.
Yeah.
And sometimes people are unrealistic in what they want. At the moment, there's a huge there's a huge vogue for very heavy metallic bases on coffee tables. So
yes,
that's something that you guys will have seen around. And then somebody says to me, yes, and the housekeeper needs to be able to hoover underneath it every day.
Oh, okay.
But this table's going to weigh about 3 tons. Yeah. Nobody's going to be able to pick that up. Do you want an all-metal base with a stone top or not?
Yeah.
Because you can't have, you know, cleaning underneath it every day. So there are things that you say no to because it's not practical. And sometimes things are... but you can make things practical. Ari and I worked on the Intercon, and one of the things they wanted was screens to screen off a bed, and they designed a really pretty, I think there is a picture of it.
You'll come back round again.
with birds and branches. They wanted to bring the park in, and we made it. It was cast metal, and it was lovely, and I wanted to recreate that in my showroom. And I couldn't afford to. So we made it out of wood and put glass on either side.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't, you know, it wasn't strong enough, made out of very thin hand-carved wood, but it looked great. And so we just plonked a piece of glass on either side and it was perfectly okay. So, you know, sometimes, particularly on residential, you look for ways of still achieving what people want because it is only a one-off and you can... The owner invests so much in it. It's what they dream of.
Yeah.
You know, we've done some amazing, funny little vanity tables that obviously some lady, that's in her mind. that's really going to make this bedroom for her, that she's got this beautiful vanity table or mini bars at home. You know, you know the chap has got involved and he wants to be able to show his whiskey off or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so you have to find ways of making those dreams come.
And that is a value to them, isn't it? Because that's something that they can say, this was made just for me and this is a special thing. Is monogramming a thing? I was talking to an interior designer recently. She was saying she just loves putting monograms on everything. But do monograms, do people like those on furniture?
No. That's a personal point of view.
No, it really depends on your client.
Yeah,
but
sure.
I would try and steer them away. Yeah. Like, you know, if the house has a pretty name, then I think if it has a reference or something like that, it's more interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, we did the Aqua restaurant, and they wanted the sign on the back of the Aqua sign on the back of every chair, and we did it. But
did you do that with embroidery, or how was that done?
No, it was actually done with a metal.
Oh, okay.
That was then kind of screwed into place. But you know, it's actually pretty rare for us. We
in super yachts, it's. The monogramming is they love it.
It's a thing.
They love it. Yeah. I've spent millions and millions on this. And everything you pick up, you want to know that it.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not my taste.
Okay, moving quickly on. So you mentioned that a lot of people wanting these sort of heavy metal tables. What else are people asking for at the moment? That you're sort of, is there a trend, or what are people wanting from you guys? Wanting you to create for them at the moment. Across all markets.
I have to say, like, the mini bar and the ever changing how much work space, how much desk space do you really need in a room? You know, can the desk go away? And then sometimes it can, but then all of a sudden it comes back in at the last minute. So I think desks and TV things are the trickiest.
Closing the TV away, do you mean?
Well, I'd like to close it away, but not everybody wants that, and it's usually not affordable in a typical hotel room. But I'm wondering when it will go away entirely, because people are always traveling with their own devices. So
good point.
And we're doing one project right now where the TV is so thin, you can hardly even see it, but you still have a sound bar to deal with, so then you have to figure out a nice console for that. So. I think desks, consoles, writing tables, like multifunctional tables, that's a really interesting avenue for bespoke design, because you're supposed to be able to eat at it, you're supposed to work on it, you're supposed to be able to have a drink on it. So it's kind of a thing for all functions within a hotel room.
Yeah.
And there's nothing really out there that you could just pick off the catalog.
That's so true.
I think on the for us on the residential side, I think home offices have become more of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, thankfully technology is getting smaller, so you need and kits getting smarter.
Yeah.
So there's less cable management.
Yeah.
But it still needs to be considered. And I think dressing areas, functional spaces, how storage, we live in London and it doesn't matter what your budget is or what project we're working on, a lot of the time you're trying to create storage, smart storage for your clients.
Yeah.
And
that's where bespoke really comes in, because it absolutely fits the space available, doesn't it?
You can go right up the ceiling. Everybody loves, on our more contemporary projects, everybody loves that minimal chic. But we all have stuff, and we want it, and it needs a home, and it needs to go away.
Yeah.
So I think that's where the art of bespoke really comes into play.
Yeah. So
you organise them.
Yeah. So is there obviously there is a way of dealing with clients of politely, as you say, organising them, and then you pushing them in a direction that's achievable, so you can realise their dreams for them. Just to round off, can I ask you each, what is the favourite bespoke product or project that you've ever worked on that you look back and think, I really nailed it there? What have you created in the past that you think that just exactly fitted what was needed at the time? Ariane, I'll put you on the spot first.
Oh, gosh. How can you, how can you pick between your favourite
Your children?
I would say the hardest project I have ever worked on, but also one of the most rewarding was Peninsula Hong Kong, where everything was bespoke, and their mini bar requirements were probably the most stringent I'd ever have to have to work with. So that's a fun one. I think, you know, I think the Capital Suite with Deco is a good one.
Yeah.
In what respect? What were you pleased with there?
Well, because the function of the space changed so dramatically, and we made it so multifunctional, because not only do you have two separate bedrooms on either end of this swath of suites, you have living rooms and dining room offices, and then you have the boardroom as that central feature, and Deca pretty much made everything, and we, you know, it works really well, and it's very well received in the market, and that makes me happy.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Alan, what about you? Oh, sorry,
just jump in. As a maker, that was a really nice project.
Yeah.
Because I would find it difficult to say which product or projects, because we do so many. But that one, we use so many different materials. Mm. There was a fantastic resin from somebody else that we used. There was lots of metal with stone with, you know, that. For me, that's both a trend and something I like, is that we are mixing materials much more now.
Yeah.
And that's quite difficult to do in a standardised way.
Yeah.
But when you do it...
So just really satisfying to see that come
and
together.
Pouring over the shop drawings together and figuring out, like, will that make sense? That was a really fun process.
Oh, that's really nice. And Alan, what about you? Is there anything that you look back on fondly?
Well, quite a few years ago, on the cruise line side of what we do, for P&O, we design. I was lead designer for P&O Aurora,
which
is now being refitted, but the atrium is still there. And so I created the concept, which was it was Aurora, the artwork panel, which was actually a waterfall as well. So waterfall on a ship. So, and again, this is where. But essentially, what you know, like we worked through, technically we worked through that. So essentially, you have very thin tension wires, and the water is almost like just dropped through.
Had you done anything like that before?
No, it was like it is. It, even to this day, it's still a beautiful atrium.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm very proud of what we did.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's you know, M Studio, in terms of the work that I've been involved in, I think we're pretty timeless. Doesn't necessarily mean that your work rate comes around quickly enough if you're working. But certain jobs, some of the older jobs, are still very, very proud of. And then, always looking forward to the next challenge.
It's going to be different every time, isn't it? That is the joy of bespoke. It is going to be different every time. Yeah. Mm. That's lovely. I'd really like to thank you all. That was fascinating.
Thank you.
And
thank
if
you all for
you've
coming.
All got any questions, fire away.
I think the technical side, I mean, if it doesn't work, it's useless. So I think getting down to the technical requirements to solving that problem is number one. And then I guess number two is to make it very beautiful, which is a lot easier to do when you know that you have a manufacturer with lots of experience that you can rely on. And you know that their past work, and you know you have confidence in them when you're about to do something stupid, that they will tell you, no, I wouldn't do that, but we can do it this way. You know, that conversation is really important.
Yeah. Anybody else?
If you do bespoke and furniture for hotels, it's mostly for five-star hotels, right?
Yes, but not necessarily. I mean, bespoke can be done for 3 and 4 star as well. As I said before, because of the quantities, it's not necessarily more expensive to do bespoke.
There's an economy of scale.
Right.
So if they're going to make 500 nightstands... Yeah,
at
the
same time.
And also a hotel has certain requirements. You know, I mean, we make a lot of hotel furniture and we expect people to sit on everything. Mm. You may have designed it not to be sat on, but they're going to. And as somebody once said to me, I want this mini bar to be so robust that you could dance on it. And I just thought, oh, God. But it is... So therefore, even the lower end furniture, it has to be just as robust. So yes, they'll use much cheaper products, that materials, but they, you know, that room design is probably unique for that group. So then, and then it's going to become unique. It's going to be tweaked. Even something that looks like it's just been rolled out everywhere, it won't be. They'll have, you know, half a dozen sizes of desks, even though you think when you've walked into the room it's the same. So in order to do that, it you know, I think...
Well, I think you made a very valid point that you have standard, you have custom, and then you have bespoke.
Yeah.
Custom is where you're taking some, you know, a chair, but you, you know, I'd say to Gemma, well, can we have the, you know, the back higher? I don't like the brass detail. Can we have a handle on the back? Mm. So it is... That's a more cost-effective way of entering the world of bespoke.
Yeah, tweaking.
You've done the initial work on the ergonomics of the chair. If you're doing that, particularly on upholstery, I would say that works, you know, particularly on upholstery. Mm. The ergonomics is so difficult to see from a drawing. You know, even it doesn't matter how experienced somebody is, it's very difficult to tell from a drawing how a chair is going to sit in. Mm-hmm. So if you're just tweaking it, as Alan says, you know, these are custom chairs of one of our designs, somebody's customized it, and you know, the basic chair is the same, but it looks very different to the original. But you know, with a nightstand, you can start from scratch every time. So customization is the right thing to do for a lot of things, but particularly, as you said earlier, for upholstery.
Yeah, absolutely. Anybody else got any more questions?
So the spokes have the sort of quality and durable, and you can do whatever you want, so it's gorgeous, but what happens when it goes wrong? So you get the quantity wrong, or it's not what the client wants, so I mean, how do you deal with that?
Oh, good question.
Well, I can talk about one particular.
Oh, yes,
instance.
Let's have an
so
example.
So, this is where, so we finished the refurbishment of Queen Victoria, it was a Cunard ship, and we had specified tables from Davison, who were here in the harbour. Mm. And Cunard's brand, the ethos and the look and feel is very Art Deco inspired, and I'd seen a table within their collection and really wanted to use it in one of their suites. Table arrives, everything's fine, looks beautiful, dress the room. Next minute, I'm having a phone call from housekeeping, because you've dressed the room, the ship's now, all the passengers get on and you have to get off. And then we had a phone call saying, we've had to take that table out of the room. It keeps falling over. And that's where we had to go then back to the manufacturer, and they misunderstood. They thought that the table was going to be bolted down.
Oh.
So this is... And... Hands on, you know, hands up. I saw the drawing, I signed it off.
And
did
how
not
many
put
items
two
were there, Ella?
Quite a few. But then, you know, it is your relationship with that supplier, because then we work really hard, because obviously it's prestige for them. Obviously, yeah, embarrassing for me. But it was just one of the things. Like, we'd worked through all the elements, signed off the drawing, and it arrives, and it's not fit for purpose. Yeah. So essentially, they had to... Because the ship was in service, they then had to make a new base, and then send it to the ship, and then ship staff then had to attach that base. It was just a plate to go on the bottom.
Yeah.
But things do go wrong. But then I think this is where it is vital that you're working with the right manufacturer that also takes responsibility and wants your client and you as their client.
Well, that's the joy of a long-term relationship, isn't it? That because it's not a one-off. And actually, I was going to ask, because both of you obviously have a very good relationship with Decca, but how do you get your little black book of suppliers? Or, I mean, over the years,
Don't divulge it to anybody.
Okay. So it really is just trial and error, isn't it? You're going to try somebody for something and then see how it goes.
You know, well, everybody's here for focus to look at new product and feel inspired, and you know, that we've been doing it maybe a little bit longer, Arianna. So, you know, it is, how can I say, you're constantly looking for resources, looking for something new. Yes, there has to always going to be a first time with a certain supplier or vendor. And then I think it's down to how you work with them.
Yeah.
You know, I've had a situation where we had custom bed linen made, and it wasn't the standard we required. I ended up, you know, calling the supplier in.
Yeah.
I'd much prefer dealing with people face to face. I think
yeah.
we live in an era now where everybody's, you know,
too
bouncing
emails.
Out emails. It sat down and I was like, what's happened? You know, I know you for your quality. What happened? And it transpired that, you know, he lost three members of staff. They really tried hard to meet fulfill the order
yeah.
and raced and rushed it, and it just wasn't great.
Yeah.
And he's having to remake the whole thing again. So when you think of that, that's it's unfortunate. It didn't, you know, thankfully, really good client, was understanding.
Yeah.
Is happy that they're going to get everything remade. But, you know, it's trial and error. You know, you have to work with them
yeah.
and understand that, you know, things do go wrong, but it's how you work together collectively to put those things right.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't be scared of bespoke.
But
there
it
is
goes back to the spending, and you know, the more time you have at the beginning.
Mm.
Yes, the conversations you have.
We have a client who just never seems to tell us how many he wants in a particular hotel, because he doesn't pay for a quantity surveyor, he doesn't pay the designer enough to do that, and you know, we're about to literally start production next week, and only today did I get some final numbers.
Two.
And
no, just a bit more. A bit more. Okay.
You know, at the end of the day, you can make more. So if you make too few, that's not a major problem. It might be a bit later. If it's a reasonable size commercial project, called attic stock, and they've got a couple left over that they can then swap out when something goes wrong, and actually that happens quite a lot in hotel projects. If you're making for a private residential project, you're not going to get the numbers wrong. What you're going to get wrong is the fact that you've never made this item before, and the client's really excited and they want it by Christmas, and actually we haven't spent enough time designing it. Collectively, it's not the designer's fault, it's not our fault, but collectively we haven't, you know, shop drawings are this amazing tool, but you do have to know what you're looking at, and everybody in the room has to look with fresh eyes on it, because somebody is going to see something that might not be right, and if it's only one or two people that have looked at it, it's not enough.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, you don't get as much wrong when you spend long enough on the drawings.
Yeah, but it is a new thing each time, isn't it? So you haven't
yes,
been through that process before.
Yeah, but that's why shop drawings are
yeah
the lifeblood. So, and you know, when a company says to you, please check the drawings, they really mean it.
Yeah.
They really mean, once you've signed on the dotted line as a designer,
that's what you're getting.
You are going to get that. Mm. And you can't say, but I thought it should be.
Mm.
Where do we say that on the drawing? You know, and it's absolutely critical that you check things.
Actually, the one thing that I would like to add onto the shop drawings is, if certain things are really complicated, a complicated edge or something, you know, sometimes it pays to pay to get a small mock-up of, say, that corner or the leg, or just to understand how, if your vision of how that material is looking aligns with what they can produce.
Yeah.
Mm. So, you know, touching, feeling, you know, it's just like a carpet strike off before you order custom carpet.
Yeah.
It's helpful.
Definitely.
And again, you need
yeah.
the time to do that. So these things cannot be rushed.
Yeah. And color is how people think or describe color
yeah.
is a huge thing, is that you really
yes.
do need to see it and, yeah, to
yeah. And you need to have,
it.
You know, be able to send, you know, veneers back and forth, and stains,
mm.
and gradations of shine, and you know, just how the thing should feel. That's really the most important, right after shop
Brilliant.
Drawings.
Any other questions? Oh, one more.
No,
that's
we custom.
At best, that's custom. And if it has been, actually, there's much at the top end of the market, there's virtually no stock kept. Nobody keeps stock anymore to the same extent. So when you say it's mass produced, it isn't. And that's why they can change the colour or tweak it. But it's still customising something. So that's why I would draw a distinction between custom and bespoke. Bespoke is when you start from a drawing and a concept or something. What they're doing is customising. It doesn't matter that, you know, it neither is returnable, sadly.
Sadly, I've got to... Oh, we've got time for one quick question. Yeah.
I think, in my experience...
Never enough.
Yeah, I mean, we've worked with some of the biggest design names and they will come back again and again and again. The only time that we get cross is...
No,
we never get cross. We're very, very nice to everyone. I think we do have an expectation that people have enough experience to look at the whole piece. And if, you know, if they completely change the design, that's fine. That's probably the end user that's changed their mind. We get it. But if they are tweaking for no, you know, there are things that we can do and things that we can't do. And there isn't a time when we say no. We will always do that last change because we can't, you know, once it's made, it's made. So we want to get it right. But I think sometimes people overthink and actually their first initial, this is what we are going to make, is probably pretty good. Mm. And the problem is in us understanding what they want. So it's not that we don't mind changing, that's fine. But the more information you give us from the beginning, the more likely it is to speed that process mm-hmm. up.
Okay. That's lovely. Thank you so much, panel. I'd like to thank Ariane, Alan and Gemma for being great and sharing so many thoughts, if not their little black book of contacts. So if we could all say thank you to them for being an excellent panel.
Thank you. Thank you.